Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. Our mission is to make analytics practical. This is not about abstract theory, but to share true stories of how using analytics helps real-life businesses with real-life constraints make the best possible decisions to compete, grow, and thrive. I'm your host, A.G. Tan. We've all heard the truism that cash is king in a business. And when faced with the business uncertainty arising from something like the COVID-19 pandemic, it's even more important. It's all about timing, coordinating when your customers pay you with when your own bills are due. This is a classic analytics problem involving data, modeling, and reporting. Joining me today to dive a bit deeper into cash forecasting is Chartered Accountant and Qubit CEO, Gary Quirk. Welcome, Gary. Hello.
Hi, AG. Nice to be here.
Let's assume, Gary, that someone listening is not an accountant. Can you give a brief overview of what cash forecasting is for that audience and why it's so important to a business?
Sure. Perhaps I'll illustrate it with an example. I mean, I think a lot of people understand the concept of profit, right? You know, you sell stuff for $1 million and you have $800,000 of cost, you make $200,000 of profit. And people generally think that's a good thing, right? The challenge is, though, that what actually feeds an organization in terms of the way it functions day to day is not profit, but it's actually cash flow. So I'll just illustrate the example. Let's say you did a deal of $1 million at the start of the month, and your payroll costs are $800,000 for the rest of the month, and you start the month with $800,000 of cash in the bank. By the time you get to the end of the month, you've met the two payrolls. You haven't yet been paid for the $1 million of revenue. You made $200,000 of profit, so it all looks good. But then what happens is the client calls you and says, "I'm sorry, but because of COVID-19, I can't pay you for the next 30 days. You say, "Well, hang on a second, I've got payroll to make in 15 days. Where are I going to get the money from?" So the reality is that, you know, you run out of cash and the business goes under. So one asks the question, what's more important there? Is it important to make the $200,000 profit, or is it important to have enough cash flow, cash, to actually make payroll? And of course, the answer is it's important to have cash. And, you know, in the real world, what companies do is that they have facilities, typically with banks, that provide them with access to credit, you know, in the form of things like, you know, lines of credit, where they can draw upon that. And really, that's the difference between what you're paying out and what you're coming in and the timing of those things. Because for most businesses, the reality is that they tend to pay out things like payroll a lot sooner than they get the money in, right? And there's things that people do in terms of, you know, offering discounts to get money in sooner and so on and so forth. It, you know, it's so, like now is like, you know, what's keeping the business world ticking right now? It's the ability of access to cash flow. So the government is helping certain businesses, providing them with loans, and there's, you know, companies have their own, you know, existing cash reserves. So cash is everything. And as a business owner, you know, you come to learn over the years that cash is far, far more important than profit. But, you know, the reality is that everyone focuses on profit in terms of performance. If I could just digress very slightly, what's interesting is that when I was back in Europe in the 1990s, there was a movement towards concepts like economic value add and value-based management. I won't go into those because they're complicated subject areas, but they're basically, the notion is really to sort of define performance in terms of, you know, an individual management impact on cash flow, which then translates into discounted cash flow, which then translates into value, right? So this whole movement was going forward, and I figured I'm going to come to the US and this is going to be a great thing because I'm sort of, you know, a bit ahead of the curve on this, and I've done some consulting on it. And what I found is that there was literally no interest in it in the US at all. It wasn't even a thing. And I think part of it, looking back now, I realized that over the last couple of decades, you know, it's been, you know, borrowing money has been very inexpensive, right? You know, for all kinds of reasons, very low interest rates and so on. So things like this hasn't been important, but guess what? You know, you have a pandemic like COVID-19, and all of a sudden cash management, cash forecasting all of a sudden is extremely important. It's the difference between survival and failure. So I feel like it's sort of a renaissance for me back from two or three decades ago. And, you know, I think it's never more important than now.
I think we can relate it a little bit to our personal lives, you know, and I'm not saying this is true for me, but imagine a scenario where, you know, you're, because interest rates are so low, you're just running up the debt on your credit cards, you know, on a personal level. And the equivalent here is that all of a sudden, you know, you can't get any more credit. You're maxed out. And there are no other options. And that's what a business that runs out of cash is really facing, right?
Exactly. You know, if again, this is a little bit of digression, but, you know, we work in the technology industry and there's a lot of companies, you know, particularly, you know, newer technology companies in their early days, classically these software companies that have, you know, sort of cloud-based subscription pricing models. And you look at their financials and they're all losing money. Like Uber is another example, you know, losing money year after year after year, but they're still valued at billions of dollars. And say, how can this possibly be? And the reason being is because the folks that are in the business of actually valuing companies and ultimately buying and selling their stock on the stock exchanges are sort of, you know, betting on the fact that downstream the cash flow is going to exceed, it'd be positive against the negative situation now. So over time, the value, you know, is created. And, you know, in the case of subscription pricing, the rationale is that, you know, your cost of sale goes down over time and your revenue continues to go up. And therefore, you know, your cash flow, net cash flow over time is going to be, you know, exponentially large. And actually, if you track companies like Amazon, you know, as an example, there's many years that Amazon, you know, wasn't making great profits. They were making lots of investments. And look at them now, all of a sudden, you know, they can't print money fast enough in terms of what, you know, their terms of their cash flow. So, yeah, cash is everything. And that's applicable to the smallest companies in the world and the largest companies in the world.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that accounting 101 lesson, Gary.
My pleasure. Hopefully, not too esoteric, but, you know, as you say, it's also basic, like, you know, how much you've run up in your credit card and how much you're able to, you know, keep spending versus, you know, what your facilities are. It's often business is just a slightly more complicated extrapolation of personal experience.
So since you mentioned technology companies, let's ask this question. So who in a business, who in a company actually does the cash forecasting? And what technologies would they typically use to do it?
Sure. I mean, there's, depending on the size of the organization, it's usually, you know, the controller, the CFO, and the treasury organization. You know, larger organizations, certainly publicly traded organizations, have treasury departments. Their role is actually all around making sure that the organization has the borrowing and the cash facilities available for their organization. And there's a lot of complexities around what they do. But it's those folks that, you know, the folks in finance that are mostly doing the, you know, the cash forecasting. It, on a day-to-day basis, there'll be folks within the accounting organization that are sort of managing, you know, the inflows and outflows in payables and receivables. So they're kind of, they're periphery to the whole forecasting process. In terms of tools, you know, there are specialist tools out there from companies like Thomson Reuters that manage, you know, complex, you know, treasury management, you know, functions. But I'll be honest, the most commonly used tool is Microsoft Excel, you know, would you believe? You know, it's like, you know, it's, you know, models are put together and you know, often put together by the finance folks that are involved in it. And they try to manage things that way. And there's a lot of challenges around that. And then, you know, ourselves in technologies that we consult on, things like planning analytics, we're able to, you know, build cash flow models in a more sort of multidimensionally rich way. And there are a lot of, you know, potential for a lot of value from using, you know, the capabilities of a multidimensional tool, because it's, you know, this problem is not just about, you know, sort of a two-dimensional framework. You know, there's like, you know, it gets down to ultimately, you know, individual clients, individual products, individual markets, you know, all these kinds of things come together. And then these models can get really, really complex. They're partly complex by the fact as well that they tend to align with things like the accounting standards, right? So there's a lot of ways that there's a lot of practice around accounting, and you end up with what's kind of known as indirect cash flow and direct cash flow. Indirect cash flow is really kind of a reporting concept, right? It's a way of defining, you know, the difference between the balance sheet at one point in time and the balance sheet at another point in time. And it kind of approximates to like cash. And if you look at a cash flow statement, that's usually in a financial statement, it will start with sort of cash at the top and the cash at the end. And then all the movements in between sort of define that reconciliation. Direct cash flow is literally about managing, you know, the flows of cash in the business. You know, I'm paying this customer, I'm actually receiving this information, this money in from this customer, and I'm paying this vendor, and so on, and I'm actually borrowing this amount of money from this particular bank account. I'm drawing on this particular line of credit, all those kinds of things, and you have this notion of cash, of direct cash flow. I would say direct cash flow is like real cash flow, right? Whereas indirect, is as much a reporting standard as anything.
So you mentioned IBM Planning Analytics as one of the tools that we use with our customers to manage more complex cash flow modeling than you can traditionally do in something like Excel. And obviously there are other tools. We also work with Adaptive, for example, from Workday. And there are other tools out there. And you've touched on some of the limitations of staying with Excel and not investing in one of these software platforms that can do that. Do you have any thoughts on why that's the case? Why are so many companies, slow to go to software platforms as opposed, and then stay with Excel? Is it inertia? Is it not really realizing what's possible? Is it cost? Any thoughts?
Yeah. So you mentioned the beginning. I'm actually a chartered accountant, right? So I still pay my dues every year, but you know, I don't do accounting, but I've done accounting in my time. So I've had some sort of association with it. If you look at any organization, it's easier to see it in a larger organization than a smaller one. You kind of have two kind of general fields in accounting. You have the folks that do like the actual accounting, where they're on top of all the accounting standards and so on and so forth. And that's a pretty complicated job. And then you have the kind of like, I guess you'd call them the management accountants. Those are the folks that are working with the business, trying to solve, you know, various types of, you know, profitability modeling business problems. And it tends to be the management accountants that tend to be sort of more exposed to like these technologies, right? They're the majority, you know, the FP&A teams and so on. Whereas, you know, the job is complicated enough to be a controller and a CFO, to also to be, you know, on top of like the latest technology and using the technology, you know, it's easy to sort of, you know, not find the time in the day to do that stuff, right? So using tools like Excel is kind of, you know, what people naturally migrate to. The challenge, as I see it, is that ultimately, if you're trying to model cash flow, there's a relationship between, you know, the other key statements, the income statement and the balance sheet. And when it boils down to it, what you're trying to do is, you know, you know the opening balance for something, you know the closing balance, and you know the movement. And the movement is often defined by things that happen in the income statement. So like the movement would be how much revenue you had or how much cost you expended. And you can derive the cash flow from that as a statement of things like days outstanding against the movement, right? So mathematically, if you said you're going to get paid in 45 days or you won't pay it to 60 days, you can mathematically model that off against the movement to calculate what the cash would be, and then obviously that will reconcile. You're actually modeling the closing balance, which then derives the cash, because it's opening balance plus movement less closing balance equals the cash, right? So if you can model the closing balance as a function or assumption of the movement, you can then derive the cash. It kind of works that way. So here's the basic problem. The basic problem is that most accounting systems are not set up to make this easy, right? What happens is that if you look at a chart of accounts, you'd love it where everything on the income statement could be defined by something you can kind of separately identify on the balance sheet. So you could get a balance for everything. But it doesn't work that way. You know, you tend to have things like many different receivables, two or three receivables accounts, but many, many different types of revenue accounts. Or you have a couple of payables accounts, but many, many different types of expense accounts. And those things don't line up, right? And maybe the way that the receivables and payables interacts with the bank accounts, where the cash is actually in and out, maybe may also not align nicely, right? So what happens is that if you're trying to model this, you have to kind of like, it's like a mapping exercise in many ways, right? And people make approximation rules. You know, they sort of approximate it, and it starts to get really complicated. So usually when it's in Excel, it's overly simplified, right? Which means it tends to be not very accurate. If you try to make it complicated, there's also the other side of it that you sort of, you know, it's like you're trying to create these like really, really, you know, complicated rules, and your spreadsheets get larger and larger and larger and larger. And really what you're really saying is that against things like revenue and receivables, you've got other dimensions to come into play that you could make this modeling more easily, make it more easy. So it's like, it just is, once you start to get into the mapping exercise and try to model this, it's just complicated. And really a spreadsheet is the great thing to get it up and running, but it's not great at any kind of scale. And you know, the reality is that with this kind of thing, if you could ultimately get the perfect system, you would literally be looking at individual vendors, individual customers, how they're paying, how that relates to the income statements and balance sheets and cash flows, and then you'd have everything. You couldn't possibly do that in a spreadsheet, right? Spreadsheet's just not, hasn't got the capacity. But you can do this stuff, or certainly get closer to it, with tools like Planning Analytics.
Got it. You know, so just in case anybody who is not an accountant was, you know, got a little bit lost in there, let me try to paraphrase it, because I'm not an accountant either. So I'm going to try and paraphrase it in terms that I can wrap my brain around, right? So if I'm thinking about managing my cash flows for myself as an individual, my opening balance, like you talked about your opening balance and your opening cash balance, would be perhaps like my checking account, right? So that's always a balance. That's how much money I've got in the bank. And the reason I care about my cash flows is that, you know, I want to be able to project forward that, you know, a week from now, will I have enough money in my bank account to pay my rent? And 2 weeks from now, will I have enough money in my bank account to pay my, you know, my child's college tuition, and so on and so forth. And when you talk about, so that balance is sort of on my balance sheet. And then I've got the income statement stuff, which is my salary coming in, or my, you know, I pay for something, I pay for groceries, I pay for whatever. So that's what's coming in and out, right? And then the net of all of that becomes then the ending balance. And I think what you're saying is that when you're small, when you're just a single person, you can count all the things that are coming in and out. And you can, and you have a pretty good idea, you know, my mortgage is due next week and the college check tuition is due 2 weeks from now. But if you're in a company and you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of vendors coming in and out and customers, and each customer's got different payment terms and each vendor's got different payment terms, you know, it's a totally overwhelming exercise to even figure that out. And yet you have to somehow get to some reasonable approximation in order to run your business. And that's where you start building a model and making assumptions. Like you could say, on average, this group of vendors might, you know, might have 30 payment terms or whatever it is. But in a spreadsheet, you're really, really limited as to how detailed those models can get.
Exactly. And even with tools, so you know this, AG, that when I first was a consultant in the United States, I worked with a tool called a datum planning. And I used to build cash flow models in a datum planning. And actually, before I became a consultant, my last sort of real job, as I call it, back in the UK, I did this, right? I built one of these models. Now, a data planning was more and more capacity than Excel did, but it still didn't have enough capacity to do what I really ultimately want to do. You roll on about a decade from that point, and I now had a new tool now that we call that tool planning analytics today. So if I want to sort of, in sort of a dimensional model way, want to have a dimension with, say, 10,000 vendors in it, or have 5,000 vendors, and I want also have the invoice numbers in the system, because I'm getting the details at the invoice level, because the invoice level ties to the contract, which gives me the exact terms of what's going on, all those kinds of things. I have the ability to sort of get down to much more granular levels of detail. And what tends to happen with these things is the real value is on the margins. There's large parts of businesses that's not that different to what you describe in a personal life, where certain things are pretty constant. Like payroll tends to go out twice a month for most American companies, you know, on the same day, so you can predict what it's going to be. You just need to know what your costs are and it goes out. You can do that. But what's much harder is when you get down to like specific vendors in specific circumstances, that the vendor might be, you know, as you say, they've all got different terms. Sometimes those terms are tied to performance. Like, did they deliver the project on time? You're not going to get paid until you deliver the project on time, or you're going to get paid as you go, and all those kinds of things. And so if you kind of lump all that together, it gets kind of noisy, right? And what happens is that the higher level assumptions kind of work for things like the annual budget. But when you get down to forecasting, there's something that's very, very important to understand about this. When you're doing a forecast, you've got to put the actuals in, right? And the actuals have got to seamlessly flow in to the future, right? So if these things aren't all aligned, you've suddenly now got this imbalance that makes the model flawed. So the actuals are the things that are defined in the more granular detailed terms. And it's very difficult to like over approximate them up. You've got to kind of keep them at a detailed level, which then implies you want to have your forecast periods more detailed as well. And, you know, as I've become more experienced at using tools that with higher capacity, my personal vision for cash flow management potential has grown, because, you know, you can think of the idea of, you know, taking your income statement at a very detailed level by product, by customer, and so on. And you might have to do some smart tricks like re-engineer your balance sheet to be on the same level, but it's often like an allocation exercise that gets you much closer to, you know, very, very accurate, even though your accounting system is not set up that way, right? So, you know, there's lots we can do to really improve cash flow forecasting. And I can tell you now that, you know, we have clients that, you know, they find when they have these tools, getting through times like now really makes the difference, right? They can really get on top of these details, know who they should pay, improve their practice, you know, the what if these scenarios, what if I don't get this money from these groups? What's the impact on a, you know, sort of customer by customer basis? I mean, we do it at Qubit, right? We actually say, okay, we've got these 450 clients, and we know that some of them are in industries that are more impacted than others, right? So we can actually start to make assumptions on an industry level and say, realistically, if you're in, say, the hospitality industry, the chances are those folks are struggling harder than, say, you know, folks, you know, working in perhaps, say, food retail, that, you know, is a different animal right now, different scenario. So we can look at that stuff and then we can flow it through. If you were just at a spreadsheet level, just putting a high level assumption, you'd miss that nuance, right? You need to know the relative balance of these things and so on. It's very important, you know?
That's a great example, and it really illustrates how the right technology can make all the difference. Do you have any thoughts on using artificial intelligence techniques like predictive analytics and cash forecasting?
Yeah, I mean, there are factors in this where the great thing about AI and machine learning and predictive analytics and this whole sphere is that it's very good at identifying patterns at a low level, right? Things that they're quite difficult to see. So those patterns can be very, very useful in terms of improving the assumptions that are in the model, right? What drives it? Like it could be that just because the contract says a particular vendor is meant to pay in 45 days, or you're meant to pay them 45 days, or a customer's meant to pay in 45 days, that their pattern may be much greater than that. And the AI machine learning tools will actually help identify that. You always will need a human overview on top of this, because at the end of the day, you know, just because a pattern exists doesn't mean it's necessarily going to prevail, you know, forever, because the reality is that it boils down to the folks that actually manage the cash coming in and going out in a business are literally making phone calls to get money in, and they're making decisions to stop money being paid out, and it really is looking at things, making those decisions. So the AI machine learning is really going to help identify the patterns in the process, which then lead to greater accuracy. But ultimately, you know, you can't just let this thing run on itself, because you know it will miss, you know, the human nuances of the process.
It needs to be a human machine partnership to get to the optimal result, doesn't it? And it's very important to understand that while you can never forecast the future with 100% accuracy, a good forecast is better than no forecast at all.
Yeah, and I think also as well, there are other factors in terms, if you think about managing a business is as much about learning, right, from the past, so you can make better decisions in the future. So if you understand what the drivers were at a detailed level, and you can explain them, and you can explain the variances against those drivers in the correct terms, you can learn from that to make better decisions in the future. And that's a key thing that sometimes, like I think a lot of people perhaps think of the only value of predictive analytics is to actually give greater accuracy. That is true. It does give greater accuracy, but it's not the only value. The other value is it gives you greater understanding of why things are the way they are, right? Because, you know, there's actually, you know, a large part of the process is really working at that detailed level, giving insight to things that, frankly, it would take humans too many man hours to wade through, right? It just is able to crunch through that stuff and cluster things together and so on and so forth, right? And, you know, and understand relationships, right? You know, knock on relationships. So, for example, let's say there's a particular type of cluster of customers or geographic region or industry of customers. There's probably relationships between them and other things. And if you understand that, you know that if you have an assumption that's going to impact that cluster, you know also the relationship of how it's going to affect everything else. And that can be pretty material, you know, impacts on cash.
Well, I think that's been a great introduction to cash forecasting. And in fact, you managed to get into a little bit of detail there. I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this.
Great, thanks. Maybe we can do this again sometime. We can delve in to any of the subject areas, perhaps in a little less detail, because, the other way around, more detail, more time, because as I say, it's a pretty complicated area, but you know, it's, believe it or not, cash flow forecasting can actually be pretty exciting, actually.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. Do stay in touch. You can email us at info@quebit.com or check out past episodes and transcripts at qubit.com/podcast. Until next time, take care.